What is up, everybody? Welcome to a special simulcast edition of Under the Radar. My name is Brandon Tanguma, and we're here to review AEW Revolution 2024. So yeah, we're doing a little crossover episode. It's going to go on the Bulletcast feed, also going on the Curveballs and Chair Shots feed. Here to talk about Revolution, just me. No Philip, no Dominic, no Katie, definitely no Brian, but let's just jump on into it. You know, normally when we do these pay-per-view recaps, I love to kind of go through in sequential, easy for me to say, order. But I think we should start off with the main event. The reason everybody was there, the one that sold 16,000 plus tickets, that would be Sting's retirement match. We've not known about this match was going to happen for, what now, like 6 months at this point. And at that, you know, when he announced it was going to be a Revolution, it's like, oh, that's a long time away. And here we are, March 3rd, 2024. It's wrestling, so you never know if someone's going to actually have a real last match. But Sting says this is the end, and for right now, it is the end. And what a end it was. So let's just, I mean, let's go into it. Sting and Darby take on the Young Bucks, Matthew and Nicholas Jackson, in the main event in the legendary Greensboro Coliseum, a place that Sting has called home since 1988. He wrestled so many matches there. I think they did a nice job throughout the show, you know, kind of talking about some of the history about Sting. They, you know, they did a good job at the beginning. They brought out Jim Ross. Jim Ross did the last two matches of this show, so good that he was healthy enough to call this very important match. Him and Tony Schiavone go back. They were calling Sting matches in the beginning, and now they're here for the end, so I thought that was a really nice touch there. But Young Bucks come out first, or actually, Ric Flair and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat come out first. So the Dragon, that was a nice little surprise for everyone involved. He was the special guest timekeeper. I don't know how good he is at keeping time, but it was fun for him to be out there. So yeah, Young Bucks come out. They you know, have their new Succession-esque theme song. They were in a dress vest, I guess, with like dress pants type, still wearing Jordans. So new look for the Young Bucks. Then Darby Allin comes out, does his regular entrance. Then it cuts to black. We go to the outside of an old school theater. Sting sits down in one of the chairs, and they just show a slideshow of numerous Sting photos throughout his career, going from Surfer Sting, Crow Sting. Didn't show any, I think, TNA Sting. We went straight to AEW Sting, and Sting, don't know how much of this was acting, how much of this was legit, watching it for the first time. However, they decided to shoot this, but you know, he was looking at it. You can kind of maybe look at some emotion going on in his eyes, and then he the thing shuts off, curtains close. Sting says it's showtime for the last time, and then we cut, and Sting's two sons, I believe Steve Borden Jr. and Garrett Borden, one of them comes out as Surfer Sting, USA Sting, and then the other one comes out in a Wolfpack Crow Sting. And then Sting's AEW theme comes on. That cuts out. And then it transitions to the song you heard at the beginning of this podcast, Seek and Destroy from Metallica. The crowd was amped up for that. They were singing along to it. And I just thought it was a great touch. It gave a little extra oomph, more intensity into this match. And when they announced the main event, when it was time, when Jesse Roberts said, you know, it's the main event of the evening, the crowd was hyped. You could tell this was the reason a lot of people bought tickets. You know, a lot of fake Stings in the crowd, a lot of Sting shirts, a lot of Sting cutouts, signs, face paint, everything. And this match absolutely lived up to the hype. I don't know what my expectations were, what I thought they were going to do, but it was just an absolute spectacle in kind of the best and the worst ways possible. So it starts off, all four of them. When I mean all four of them, I mean Sting, Darby, and then Little Stings, Stings Juniors, they all attack the Young Bucks. They do a little 4-on-2 handicap action. And then the Sting Sons get some tables. They set some things up, and then they just kind of disappear I don't know, like I don't think the Young Bucks attacked him or anything, or there was like a real storyline reason for them to not be in the match anymore. But it was kind of illogical for them to just, as baby faces, kind of stand there and, you know, beat them up the entire time 4-on-2. But anyways, outside of that, crowd was hot. We got whatchamacallit. Everything you could probably see on social media, but they go up on the stage. Darby, well, all four of them go through tables on the opposite ends of the on the opposite end of the stage. So Sting kind of laying down, you know, getting his rest, much needed rest, because he kind of, after he gets up, he works the rest of the match. And Darby comes out. He works 2-on-1 for a little bit, fights him off, and then they brought up panes of glass before they went up to the. To the stage, and there's a little bit of a botch where Sting goes to hit, I think, Matthew, and he misses, and the bat just kind of clanks off the glass. Then Sting has to go back and hit the glass again. I think he played it off well. He kind of made it seem like it was on purpose that he hit that, and he was kind of like trying to scare the Young Bucks by doing that. But, you know, just a little bit of a mix-up, and you knew they brought out multiple panes of glass, and you knew it was going to be used. And oh boy, was it used. There was a mega ladder. I don't know how tall it was, maybe 20 feet, maybe even more, but it was huge. Like, whatever, it's probably bigger than any WWE ladder you've seen in those ladder matches. And they had a pane of glass laid on top of a bunch of different steel chairs that were opened out. And Darby had Nicholas, I believe. He went for some sort of move, you know, a swanton, some sort of dive, and Nicholas gets pulled out of the way by Matthew, and Darby comes crashing down 20 feet, 25 feet in the air, because you got to add for the extra height with the, because it went from the inside of the ring to outside of the ring. I'm sure if you're listening to this, you've seen on social media. If not, viewer discretion is strongly advised, because as soon as Darby comes down, he's flipped over on his belly and just blood everywhere. You instantly see him like bleeding. It doesn't look like very, very bad, but you can tell it's gonna be bad, because he just has like little drops and little cuts everywhere, up on his back, on his shoulders, kind of on his arm, and it was just absolutely disgusting. And that was Darby Allin for pretty much the rest of the match. He gets attended to by doctors and stuff. Then Sting comes from taking his little slumber by the stage, and he comes out. He tackles the Young Bucks 2-on-1. He's kicking out of everything. Super, double super kicks, EVP triggers, belt shots. Ric Flair, who was on the outside, he comes out to help Sting, and also Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. He gives one of the Young Bucks like a chop, but then he gets taken to Dick Kick City, so he gets taken care of. Ric Flair then comes out to help save Sting. He's just like laying on top of him, telling him, no, don't do this, because Matthew's threatening to hit Sting with a belt. He doesn't, or they don't hit Sting with him, but they do hit a double super kick on Ric Flair, so he's done for the rest of the match. And then it goes into Super Sting. He did a little bit of Super Sting before this point, but he really amped it up here, where kicking out of double super kicks, EVP triggers. I forget if they took the TK driver, which is the new Meltzer driver, but kicks out at two, kicks out at two again, then he kicks out at one, then he kicks out before one, and the crowd just gradually just gets louder and louder and louder. And I think the good part is the show was kind of long, but it was just under 4 hours, so it didn't kind of get past that 4 hour mark to where the crowd could really be, you know, tired and kind of into it, but can't bring that second, you know, that energy that you really want them to bring in this type of match. But the crowd was eating it all up. Sting goes back and forth, does the 2-on-1, unable to get the job done. He hits a Scorpion Death Drop on Matthew. He kicks out. Then Darby comes back to life. He hits a Coffin Drop. Sting puts the Scorpion Deathlock on Matthew. He gets taken out, or Nicholas takes a dive through a table that was on the outside. Sting also went through a pane of glass earlier, so there's three. So Sting and Darby both went through glass, but Sting, fully clothed, had his t-shirt on, probably with a singlet in his pants and his gloves, so no visible cuts on Sting. But Scorpion, or Coffin Drop, Scorpion Deathlock, Matthew taps out, and still, your AEW Tag Team Champions in 21 minutes, 3 seconds. Sting and Darby Allin crowd goes crazy. Just an absolutely fantastic match. I mean, I know the Darby thing was a lot, and it was a insane visual, but you knew Darby was going to do something stupid. You thought Sting was going to do something stupid, and he honestly didn't do anything like that risk-taking. Like, he did go through a table, kind of off, you know, like the middle rungs of the ladder. He went through the pane of glass. He took the bump off the stage, which, yeah, someone in their mid-60s probably shouldn't be doing that stuff, but it's very controlled. It seems relatively safe compared to, obviously, what Darby's doing, or, like, what some of the stuff Sting's done in the past where it seemed it was a little bit reckless. But I think in this type of match, you probably expected maybe a little bit more from Sting, and luckily he didn't do anything super crazy. And the match was fantastic. Everything it needed to be. I know there was much speculation on both sides whether Sting and Darby should win or Sting should go out on his back, like a lot of other legends have done in their final match. But with the Young Bucks being the way they are, they'll be fine. They'll bounce back from this. And as I said, the crowd was there for this moment. They were there for Sting, and you got to give the people what they want. And it made a whole lot of sense, because if Sting and Darby lost this match, and then they kind of do what they did at the end, where they kind of, you know, give Sting his flowers, it probably wouldn't have felt the same. And it was just a great, it was a good feel, a great, fantastic feel-good moment just for everybody involved. Darby gets the mic, says, "We got like 3 minutes of pay-per-view time, so let's give it up for Sting." So then Sting cuts a little bit of a promo, you know, thanking Greensboro, thanking the fans and all that stuff. And it was a tad bit awkward in Sting fashion, because he's getting some cues about when they're going off the air on pay-per-view. And so he's kind of, you know, stop and start. And then he finally kind of gets cut off he gets cut off at the end at the actual pay-per-view feed. If you look on social media, you can find the full promo of what he said after the pay-per-view went off the air. A lot of wrestlers, or I guess the entire locker room, comes out, congratulates Sting, and he, you know, goes out a champion. And they had some legends at ringside. They had, you know, Nikita Koloff. They had, they didn't show Lex Luger, but Lex Luger was there. They also had Magnum TA. I think DDP was there as well. So a lot of WCW and NWA legends to celebrate Sting's career. And I thought that was a very nice touch as well. So this will be remembered as Sting's last match. And it was a fantastic match to cap off a fantastic show. I think top to bottom, this was one of the best AEW pay-per-views to date. You know, kind of a weird time for AEW, where they're not doing so well, you know, drawing-wise, storyline-wise. But when it comes to the pay-per-views and there's matches that can be good, more often than not, AEW delivers. And they definitely delivered here in this match. So yeah, 16,000 plus in this venue. I don't know if this is official, but I would guess that's the biggest AEW arena gate they've had. I mean, maybe that first Dynamite in Washington, D.C., but, you know, for the most part, they're drawing around 10 to 12,000 for, like, the kind of really big shows. And the arena looked fantastic. It was well lit. They were doing a lot of different camera angles, a lot of wide shots, and it definitely is noticeable when you're watching Dynamite or Collision, or there's like 2,000 to 4,000 people there, and they're kind of jamming everyone in one section of the building, and it's dimly lit. You can't see the second deck, and it just made AEW feel big time. And this show was fantastic. So let's rewind. Let's go from the beginning. There was two pre-show matches. We had a 12-man tag, Bang Bang Scissor Gang won. Then second match, Chris Statlander, Willow Nightingale beat Julia Hart and Sky Blue by pinfall. To be honest, did not know that women's match took place. So I don't know if Statlander fully turned heel, but we'll figure that out eventually. If I watched the pre-show, I would know, but I did not watch the pre-show. Sorry about it. So pay-per-view proper. I know there was a lot of people that were having issues with the pay-per-view. I don't know which type of app, if it was the website, if it was a certain app on a, you know, Apple or Roku or something like that. But on my Amazon Fire, I had little to no issues, you know, maybe some, not even buffering issues, just kind of stream quality issues, like for a couple seconds. No big issues on my end, but I know it's been a constant issue. And we're in year 5 now of AEW doing their pay-per-views on Bleacher Report. You know, kind of time for them to figure their stuff out at this point. But one of these days, maybe we could finally get, like, these pay-per-views to be a part of a max subscription, because they're asking to pay $50, and now they're adding more pay-per-views to the docket. They announced AEW Dynasty April 21st, I believe, coming from St. Louis, Missouri. Yeah, April 21st. So in between Revolution and Double or Nothing, they have a poster or a picture showcasing all of the champions, all of the champions. And I wonder if it's going to be their kind of like Night of Champions-esque, but usually on these shows, every championship is defended. Not every championship was defended on this one, but damn near everyone. They started off with a championship match, of course, and that was the AEW TNT title. Christian Cage defending against Daniel Garcia. Christian Cage had the entire patriarchy alongside him. And this one goes 16 minutes, 50 seconds. Christian Cage retains. You know, fun, good match. You know, Christian's going to have a lot of shtick in his stuff. They worked over the leg, Christian's leg, that is. He kind of faked an ankle injury, and then Garcia went after the ankle, so then it turned legit. Christian selling that a lot, Dana Garcia going after him. But then at the end of the day, it was just too much. I believe it was Nick Wayne. It's been so long since the show started, but Nick Wayne, I think, hits Garcia, and then Christian hits Garcia with his, I think it was the finisher. Yeah, I don't think he hit him with the title belt, but anyways, Christian gets the pinfall, and that was it. You know, it was a good match. 16:50. You know, maybe it could have shaved a little bit of time off. I thought it kind of went a tad bit too long. Could have maybe gone like, you know, 12, 13 minutes instead of 16, but overall, a really good match. Good, not a super hot start. Crowd was into Garcia at times. They did the spot in the corner where, you know, Garcia's kind of giving the 10 punches, and then he, before he hits the 10th one, he does his little dance, which I believe was the only dance that he did throughout the show. Daddy Magic did come in towards the end of the match to kind of stifle off Mother Wayne. And Killswitch, I think Killswitch kind of ran him off, so they kind of canceled each other out. And then that's when kind of the finishing sequence happened, when Garcia ended up losing. Then match number 2 on the pay-per-view, we had Eddie Kingston defending his Continental Crown Championship against Bryan Danielson. Not only was it for 3 titles, 1, 2, 3, but it was for the respect that Kingston wanted from Danielson. And this was phenomenal, what you would expect. You know, both of these guys just absolutely love that 90s era strong style Japanese wrestling. And if that was their sole purpose and that's what they were trying to do, I thought they emulated that to a T. Hard hitting strikes back and forth, good mat work, good selling. Kingston was selling the right arm for a majority of it. So Danielson was working over that. Doing some submissions, doing some strikes to it, kicking it a lot. And Kingston just is a fantastic seller. I think a lot of people kind of underestimate him in that regard. I think a lot of people, you know, talk about his talking ability and his in-ring work. But I think Kingston is just fantastic at, like, garnering that sympathy. He's like a unconventional underdog babyface, especially if you, you know, compare it to like the Bryan Danielsons or the Sami Zayns of that nature. But I think Kingston is just up there with them in that type of work. And this was a fantastic match. Go back and forth. I should have brought up the actual moves that they were doing. But Kingston, trying to see what the finishing move. Danielson hits the Busaiko knee a couple times. He did the yes chant. Kingston blocks him, hits him with a power bomb for the win. So he doesn't hit him with this kind of spinning back fist move. He just hit him with a power bomb. Around 20 minutes, 19:45, the official time from Wikipedia, which is always a great source of information. And lovely, great match. This was my favorite match of the night for a majority of it, but we'll have to get to that match once we get there. Danielson sticks his hand out, then he kind of pulls it back, sticks out again. Kingston walks away, but then Danielson pulls him back in, shakes his hand. They kind of they bow to each other. So it was a nice moment. If you haven't, there is a social media video of both of them in the trainer's room, and Kingston, very emotional, just kind of thanking Brian and just saying this is all he wanted. You know, the championships, the accolades, the adulation from the fans are cool, but he just wants the respect of like his peers. And he walks off, and then Danielson, who cussed a lot, because you don't really hear Brian Danielson cuss a lot, whether like it's, you know, in his quote unquote real life with like Total Bellas and stuff like that. But yeah, Danielson cussing a lot in this promo, just kind of very high intensity from Danielson. And I thought it was great. He puts over Kingston huge here and just saying, you know, he's finally living up to his potential. He saw it the entire way, but he just knew Kingston was getting his own way, and he's finally seeing it right now, and that's great to see. So I don't know, this presumably is the end of this feud. I don't know if Danielson and Kingston will link up, whether Kingston is kind of friends with the BCC now. I know he's always going to have his thing with Claudio, so maybe Claudio will be the next person to show Kingston some respect. But yeah, Danielson freed up to maybe do some more things. Not, you know, Danielson's one of my favorites, but I kind of wish in his last year of full-time wrestling that he was doing things with a little more substance. Like he's wrestling some fun matches against some Japanese legends. He's having a fantastic match here with Eddie Kingston, but I think if you're going to have Danielson in his last year of his career, basically, you should probably use him to, not like, you know, use him to put somebody else over, but just use him in kind of a bigger deal. And I think once, like, we get closer to the end, they'll probably give him, like, a farewell send-off that's suitable for him, very similar to what they did tonight with Sting. But I kind of hope that now this thing is over. Danielson's been doing a lot of, like, you know, the dream tour of wrestling some luchadors, wrestling some Japanese legends, and maybe now he can kind of hunker down and we can get something of much more substance from Danielson here in AEW. Then we got the All-Star Scramble match. Winner receives a future AEW World title shot. In total, we had Chris Jericho, Powerhouse Hobbs, Lance Archer, Hook, Brian Cage, Magnus, Dante Martin, and Wardlow. Wardlow is your winner in 15:49. Exactly what you would expect this to be. You know, big men doing big meaty men slapping meat spots. The faster guys doing some spots and, you know, a little bit of mixing and matching here and there. Wardlow gets the win. I mean, it's exactly what you thought it would be. 15:45, a tad bit long here. I would have shaved a few more minutes off of this one as well, but you got to get your shit in, brother. Spoiler alert, with Samoa Joe being the champion, I wonder if this is going to be a TV match. I don't think they would build Wardlow versus Samoa Joe for Dynasty unless they have like another big time level match that could main event that show. So if I had to put my money on it, it would be Wardlow taking on Samoa Joe, like on a Dynamite. Maybe if Adam Cole is healthy by then, maybe they try to tell the story of Adam Cole trying to get the title shot, you know, trying to get Wardlow's title shot. Maybe that either sows some seeds of dissension within Undisputed Kingdom, or Wardlow goes the kill switch route and just hands it over to Adam Cole, no problem. Speaking of the Undisputed Kingdom, we get Roderick Strong taking on Orange Cassidy for the AEW International Championship. This one goes shorter than the previous match at 12:45, and this was a solid match. It was shorter, which is good, probably what it needed to be. If this one, it could have been an epic type match, you know, going 15-20 minutes, but you know, slapped here dead middle of the card. Did not need to be that. They told a good story in the ring. Once again, Cassidy, they told a story of him defending the title numerous occasions. This was his 12th title defense of this reign, Combined with the other rain, I think that's well over 40. I think it was 48, because I think they said he did 36 in his first title reign. So once again, Cassidy just kind of being the Iron Man of AEW. Nasty, nasty looking bump where they are in the corner on the top rope. Roddy gives him kind of like a backbreaker type move. He just kind of drops him back first on the top ring rope, and Cassidy kind of lands awkwardly, doesn't land square on the turnbuckle pad, so he kind of lands on his, like, high up on his shoulder, so he kind of does a flip. Looked disgusting. Seemed as though he fell kind of in the right place, so he didn't, like, land on his head or something like that, but Roddy gets the win. So we get some gold in the United Kingdom, Undisputed Kingdom, rather. Yeah, I guess. Like I said in the predictions on the Bullet Cast, they need to breathe some sort of life into this faction. And now with Wardlow being a AEW title contender, Roddy has a championship, so I guess they can do something now. If Cole is going to be on the shelf with his ankle, who knows when MJF is coming back. So I guess they're just kind of meander in the mid-card until they finally get that done. But until then, we'll have to wait. After the match, Kyle O'Reilly comes out from the crowd. He hugs Roddy, and it was this nice emotional moment. Then I believe it was Mike Bennett takes his shirt off, then hands it to Kyle O'Reilly, kind of inviting him into the Undisputed Kingdom. Kyle looks at it, puts it over Roddy's shoulder, hugs Roddy and whispers something into his ear, and then he walks off. And Kyle O'Reilly definitely seemed to be emotional. I don't know if it was just kind of the emotion of him being back in a ring. I don't think they would tease him, you know, just outright having him come back for them to, like, say he's retiring. Came back from neck fusion surgery. Don't know the exact timetable. When's the last time? But it's been a long time since we've seen Kyle O'Reilly. So nice to see him back. He's one of my favorites. And maybe this will be kind of the next chapter of Roderick Strong's title reign, where Kyle doesn't like what he sees out of Roddy. Maybe that leads to them having a match at Dynasty. But Kyle, a little bit longer hair, looks a little more disheveled, so maybe he's going to go with kind of a grizzly, more of a grizzly look, which I'll enjoy that look in Kyle O'Reilly, if that's what they're going for. Then, match number 5 on the pay-per-view, Blackpool Combat Club, Jon Moxley and Claudio Castagnoli take on FTR, Dax Harwood and Cash Wheeler. Good little callback with the BCC. Jon Moxley and Claudio come out wearing the Road Warrior football pad spikes. Then FTR comes out, you know, they're from Asheville, North Carolina, so they got a big pop. Two fan favorites. I think BCC had a little bigger reception. You know, they did kind of the dueling chants back and forth. I don't know if the announcers knew this was going to happen or not, but they kind of played it off. It was like, oh, we have a lot of fans traveling in to Revolution, so that's why it might be a more partisan crowd for Blackpool Combat Club. But no real heel face dynamic here, because at both of these, I mean, FTR is kind of more of a clear face team, while BCC just kind of is all over the place at this point. But they just worked a really good match. This one goes 21:50, really long match. I didn't think it went that long, but it was really well worked, and didn't seem like it was that long. Some good false finishes throughout. At the end, both Moxley and Claudio choke out Dax and Cash for the win. A little bit surprising. You know, I picked FTR for the win, but, you know, kind of looking back, I know Cash still has some of his legal things he's got to go through, so I don't know if that has anything to do with it, or if they're just gonna, you know, put over BCC. They talked about how they are the pseudo number one contenders now, and with Sting and Darby Sting retiring as champion, now that kind of leads to the question of what is next for the tag titles. Does Darby find another person to be champion with? Does he relinquish it and they do a tournament. So a lot of different questions. They obviously weren't going to bring those up during the pay-per-view, but I would assume we're going to get some talk about that on Dynamite. I wonder if we're going to get any Sting appearance. Probably not. I mean, they heavily hyped that last week's Dynamite was Sting's last Dynamite, so it would be a little corny for Sting to come out and kind of have that, like, Ric Flair retirement treatment where, like, you know, he comes out and kind of it's a This Is Your Life Sting moment. But we'll have to wait and see. I think the tag titles, whatever they do with them, it's fine. If they put on BCC. Oh, also, fun fact, there was blood in this match, and it did not come from John Moxley. It came from Dax Harwood. He dove into the ring post, and then he kind of fell down to the steel steps. Don't know if it was hard way or not. It was really nasty, and it wasn't like as pretty as you can bleed. It didn't look very precise. He kind of was heavily bleeding out of some spots. So I hope they close that up and Dak is all well and good. We got the lone women's match on the pay-per-view card proper. Timeless Toni Storm defends her AEW Women's World title against Deonna Purrazzo. Mariah May comes out as old school Toni Storm, and then regular Timeless Toni Storm comes out. This one, kind of a disappointment, but a lot of Toni Storm matches have been disappointments during this run in this gimmick at this time. You know, 12-15, very short, shortest match on the night. And I mean, if they went any longer, they were definitely kind of testing the crowd's patience. You know, the crowd likes Toni, but as I've been kind of saying, I don't know how this gimmick translates in ring and how it translates to having people care about their match. You would think this was the most storyline, this was kind of the most build we've had in a Timeless Toni Storm match thus far, and yet still the crowd did not care. I don't know if that's because it's a Deonna Purrazzo problem mostly, or if it's Toni Storm problem mostly, but with Mercedes Moné on the horizon, are we going to get like a Toni Storm Mercedes Moné match for the championship at Dynasty, or like a Double or Nothing? Or like, I just don't know if you're going to push her straight into the title picture. How does that kind of mesh? And right now this Toni Storm character is fun. Like, you know, when she's doing her shtick in Dynamite, you know, doing the black and white stuff, like it's funny and it's like kind of entertaining, but there's kind of like a point where it's not everything that's entertaining is good for the product and good for the company. So at this point, I don't really know what you do unless you do some sort of like split from Toni Storm. If she does do a full 180 and goes back to her, maybe not go back to what she used to be, but kind of evolve this character into something more, because Toni Storm's a fantastic wrestler and she's kind of wrestling a more mat-based, more gimmicky style, kind of as this over-the-top heel persona. Mariah May, who her herself's a fantastic wrestler over there in Japan, you know, she hasn't really gotten the spotlight yet. I think they're going to pull the trigger on that eventually, and they're going to do some sort of feud between them, whether that's for the title or not. I would say no. Probably May cost Storm somehow, and then they kind of veer off and do their own thing while the champion, you know, goes and defends her championship there. So yeah, just this was definitely the low point of the card. Kind of stuck in between the tag match and then this next match, and you know, kind of the women's title match was kind of like the cutoff point of like the mid card to then like the final three matches of when it kind of the pay-per-view kind of took a step up, I would definitely say. So unfortunately, the women's match was kind of put in that no win spot as kind of like a breather, and they kind of worked it like a breather. A lot of mat based, a lot of submissions, not a lot of high flying, not a lot of action paced stuff. So that's and it was a TV match basically. Like Deonna had Toni Storm tapped out, Mariah May and Luther get involved, ref gets distracted, Paraso goes to hit May. She turns around. Tony Storm hits her with the finisher, and that's how she wins. So I would assume we're going to get another match down the line, whether that's at a Dynamite or at Dynasty. But yeah, not a good match. Not a good match at all. On the flip side, very good match. Best match of the show. Possibly best match of the year thus far. Konosuke Takeshita takes on Will Ospreay in the Don Callis Family Showcase, whatever they're trying to call this. But Don Callis was on commentary, and I think AEW does a good job of kind of cycling out the commentators. They started off with Nigel. Excalibur, Tony Schiavone, then Taz fills in for Nigel. Don Callis called this one match, and then Jim Ross called the last two matches with Excalibur and Schiavone. But Ospreay comes out, or Takeshita comes out first. Cool. Then Ospreay comes out, big reception. He looks like a star. Big time pop for him. Seemed a little bit leaner. Callis kind of pointed that out. I don't know if that was by design, if him kind of taking a little bit of a break between New Japan and AEW kind of just let him, you know, he relaxed and he kind of just lost some of his muscle mass that he had in New Japan. But I think this is a great look for him. It's kind of a best middle ground for him. He got a little heavy in New Japan, and in AEW, there's not a lot of super big guys, especially in that top level main events sphere, to where he doesn't need to look like a heavyweight. He can be a slim down, a leaner Will Ospreay. He can still do a majority of his high flying stuff, but he's not obviously not going to do what he was doing 6-7 years ago with Ricochet. But I think for his body sake and just for like athleticism sake, I think it's the best. This looking Will Ospreay, you know, maybe he tones up a little bit and puts a little bit of muscle on, but he doesn't need to be as big as he kind of was when he was kind of like in that prime main event New Japan heavyweight division Ospreay. I think he looked fantastic in this match, and showed it. So did Takeshita. Both these guys just absolutely balls to the wall, high expectations, and they definitely delivered here in this one. Just hard to kind of capture and kind of talk about everything they did, but they pulled out all the stops. Takeshita, you know, puts the heat on Ospreay for a little bit. Ospreay makes his comeback, and then kind of at the 15-16 minute mark, kind of all hell breaks loose. They just go back and forth, bang, bang, bang. I know there's gonna, you know, the old school people, and some people will rightfully probably say that there's maybe not enough selling, a lot of hit a big move, kick out, hit another big move, not selling what just happened recently. But Takeshita kicked out at one, which at that point Sting wasn't kicking out at one at every other turn, so that was a big deal for him. I just thought the kind of finishing sequence was absolutely phenomenal. I don't have kind of the blow by blow, but Ospreay and Takeshita battled back and forth. Schiavone said it's amazing Ospreay can stand. Ospreay landed a poison rana, and Takeshita fired back with some moves, but Ospreay charged at him back and took him down hard. He made the cover. Takeshita kick out at one. Callis said, if you live another 100 years, you'll never see another match like this. This is incredible. The crowd chanted AEW. Ospreay took a 360 bump from Takeshita, from a Takeshita clothesline, and then Ospreay caught him seconds later with a Styles Clash for a two count. Ospreay delivered a Tiger Driver 91, then hit the Hidden Blade for the clean win. So yeah, just an absolutely like insane last 2-3 minutes of the match, and another nasty bump on the corner in this match, similar to the Orange Cassidy Roger Strong one. But this Ospreay one was, I don't know if they were going for it, but Takeshita, I think, was trying to go for some sort of like brainbuster maneuver on the corner turnbuckle, and Ospreay didn't land on the turnbuckle. He kind of landed very, very low on his back near his ass region, and luckily didn't spike his head on the ground, but instantly had a welt on his low back. You can find it on social media. It's bad. It was instantly like reddish purple just seconds after the fall. But Ospreay wins 22 minutes. incredible. Best match of the show by far. It's going to be divisive probably for some folks, but in this day and age, this type of wrestling in AEW, it was exactly what you thought it would be, and it satiated the AEW crowd, satiated me. Fantastic. Definitely would recommend you go and watch this match. No heel turn, no callous, you know, attack on Ospreay afterwards. They, you know, Ospreay shook Takeshi's hand, similar to Kingston and Bryan. Then Kyle Fletcher comes out. They announce that Fletcher and Ospreay will have a match at Dynamite. We did see a look at that new Dynamite logo, so it looks as though on Wednesday we will be getting a new look Dynamite. So interesting to see what happens there, whether it's just kind of like a fresh coat of paint, or we'll see kind of a brand new set and a different vibe to Dynamite. Interested to see what happens there, but a great showcase for Ospreay, and he is all elite. So first match as a full-time AEW wrestler, did not disappoint. Wonder what they're going to be doing here. You know, Kyle Fletcher has the history with Ospreay back at United. What the fuck was it called? United Embassy? I forget. I'm a terrible wrestling fan, I know. United Empire, I think that's what it was called. But I wonder if they're going to do some sort of breakup, because Ospreay was just a full-blown babyface here. It's not going to last long with the Callis family. You could do kind of an amicable breakup, but that's probably not going to happen with Callis. Maybe they run a match back, Ospreay and someone else at Dynasty, and he can kind of go off and have like a real big showcase-level match at Double or Nothing. People are kind of highlighting that All In London Wembley show in August as possibly his crowning achievement. Maybe put the title on him there. Quite possible, but Ospreay's 30 right now, so young, but he is in his prime of his career, and you definitely want to take advantage of him. You do not want him to be another Jay White. I mean, good Lord. The man is with the Bang Bang Scissor Gang on the pre-show of this match, of this card, and they haven't, like, completely destroyed Jay White, but this, honestly, if you were to tell me Jay White was, like, in this match, I would not, you know, was in that type of match on this pay-per-view a year ago, I would not have believed you, because I thought Jay White was absolutely can't miss. Push him to the moon, have him be, doesn't have to be the top guy, but definitely should be one of the top guys, and that is not happening right now. But hopefully we get that from Ospreay and probably Okada. No Okada on the show. People may be speculating that he was going to show up, but no, maybe big business in Boston in 2 weeks. Quite possibly. We'll have to wait and see. Speaking of that title picture, Samoa Joe defends his AEW World title match in the penultimate match on this card. He defended against Adam Page and Swerve Strickland. This one goes 19 minutes, 40 seconds. And they were in a, you know, little bit of a tough position, being sandwiched in between the Ospreay Takeshita match and then the Sting retirement. But I thought they did a fantastic job. The story of the match was kind of Swerve and Page kind of hating each other and, you know, their animosity, while Joe kind of the odd man out. But then obviously he's defending his title, so he's trying to win, trying to do everything he can. There was a few points in the match where I think both Swerve and Page were kind of covering each other, and then Joe had to break it up. But Joe was a little slow on the breakup, so it was kind of like the person kicked out maybe when they weren't supposed to. Nothing like too egregious to where the referee like accidentally counted three, or they like didn't kick out of they had to kick out of a finisher. But they reused Samoa Joe trying to break up the pinfall a few times in this match. But for whatever reason, you know, it's a triple threat match, so there's no disqualifications. But we still had to get a ref bump. Hangman Page then tries to hit or hits Swerve with the belt. I kind of forget, but basically we got the full blown Hangman heel turn here. He pulls the ref out when Swerve looks to possibly have the match won. So then once ref number one is knocked out, he grabs the belt and he, you know, goes ham, takes out Swerve. He goes after Samoa Joe. He hits him with the buckshot lariat. Then referee number two comes out. He does not get the win. Samoa Joe kicks out. Then I'm trying to remember, because then, you know, Swerve comes in and they kind of do a little bit more. And I think Swerve is pinning Joe and Hangman breaks it up. But then he also just full on beats up the referee. I think it was Bryce Remsburg was referee number two. And so that's, you know, just fully cements the Page heel turn. Announcers, you know, going ballistic, said he should be fined, suspended for putting his hands on an official like that. So maybe that'll be kind of a storyline going forward, to where Paige will miss the next couple weeks. And then they, you know, wrestle a little bit more. Referee number one kind of comes to. There was, I thought, a really good spot where Prince Nana throws Swerve his headband, his crown that has like kind of the medals and the jewels on it. And Swerve looks at it and he says, nope, he's not going to win that way. And he goes after Joe. So in one instance, Paige kind of fully turns heel, attacking the referee, while Swerve kind of officially turns babyface here by refusing to cheat in a match to win the title. I always kind of call that the NXT Sami Zayn spot, back in kind of like the Full Sail WWE Network, OG black and gold NXT era, when babyface Sami Zayn just kept losing and losing and losing, and he finally was on the verge of cheating to win the title against Neville, I believe, and he just said, yeah, I'm not doing it that way, I'm going to win it my way, win it the right way, and he ultimately did. So, not for Swerve, though. They did a good little sequence at the end where I think they had a pretty good near fall, where Swerve kicks both Paige and Joe, and Joe kicks out of the of a Swerve pinfall. Then Joe hits, oh God, they, once again, it's, if only I had a written report in here. Okay, so Hangman clothesline Swerve, but hit Joe with, oh, hold on. And then I'm reading this report, and this report's a little clusterfucked. Hangman clothesline Swerve, but Joe hit Hangman with a sudden lariat. Joe then set up a muscle buster in the corner on Swerve. Swerve blocked it. Hangman hit Joe with a buckshot. Swerve then gave Hangman a buckshot when he was up on the corner, followed by a JML driver. Joe intervened and suplexed Swerve onto his head. Joe then put Hangman in a sleeper, and Hangman tapped out. Excalibur asked if Hangman tapped out to cost Swerve his chance at the title. Don't want to say I told you so, but I said Hangman was going to take the loss here, when it was possibly to spite Swerve. So, you know, a little pat on the back for me right there. But really good match. Put in kind of an awkward position in the world title spot, you know, being second from last. But, and a lot of people kind of assume Samoa Joe is going to win here, because if you're going to crown Swerve as their champion, they would have done this in a singles match. But I think they did the best they could in this spot, and they kind of filled some time for like the first 10 minutes, but I thought the last 10 minutes was pretty good. And that concludes the show. Well, at least this recap of the show, because then Sting and Darby main evented. But overall, wonderful show. Great show from AEW here. I know, as I said, they're not in the best place creatively, but everything kind of clicked here. Outside of the Women's World title match, I thought every match kind of delivered what it should have been. You know, outside of the Scramble match and the Women's match, I presume I should add. But we do grades around here. I'm going to give this an A. I thought, you know, the Kingston Danielson Ospreay Takeshita matches were those single work rate matches that it should have been. And then that Sting retirement match was just phenomenal. I mean, you can kind of nitpick some of the work that Sting did. You know, some of the things are clunky, some of the things aren't great, but I mean, this was just like the ultimate wrestling spectacle, and it worked in every level, and I just thought it was fantastic. That concludes Sting's career. Sting was never like my favorite wrestler in the world. You know, didn't watch WCW. You know, saw him in TNA, but he was never like my favorite. But I respect the man that he, the career that he had, and also he seems like a great guy. Never hear anything bad said about Sting. Throughout his entire career, nearly 40 years now at this point, and he doesn't really have like a bad reputation at all in the wrestling business, which is hard to say, but he has it, or he doesn't have it. So shout out Sting, calling it a career. You know what they say about wrestling retirements, it never lasts, but if this one does, this was one of the best wrestling retirements of all time. So shout out Sting. Maybe if you're not burnt out from 4 hours of wrestling here with Revolution, go check out some Sting stuff, whether it's the OG Surfer Sting, some Crow Sting in WCW, Joker Sting in TNA, or his last 3 years in AEW. Once again, fantastic show. I can't wait to see what they go from here. My name is Brandon Tangoom. This has been the AEW Revolution Recap. Once again, check out everything Bulletcast, Curveballs, and Share Shots related. Follow us on social media. You know, everything will be in, all the pertinent links will be in the description down below. Don't know the next time I will do a solo pod, but until next time, love you guys all. Big hugs, tiny kisses. Goodbye. Good night. Ba-bang.
Of a once great man has risen a curse, a wrong that must be righted. We look to the skies for a vindicator, someone to strike fear into the black hearts of the same man who created him. The battle between good and evil has begun. Against an army of shadows comes a dark warrior, the prevailer of good, with a voice of silence and a mission of justice. This is Sting.